Okay. Well, I just want all of the dairy manufacturers to become plant milk manufacturers. Wouldn't that be amazing? I remember hearing a story about Finland, I think it was, and I think it was a long time ago, and I don't know what's happened since, but the government was realizing that dairy wasn't healthy, and so they helped dairy farmers become berry farmers, I think it was, and to move to another product. And this is something that needs to happen. Now, we know we can't rely on the government, especially this government right now, to assist in any helpful programs to do good things. It seems like our government today is looking to take away any programs that do things that are good, and our food system is definitely at tremendous risk right now with the regulations that are being changed to benefit corporations and not benefit consumers. So we need to do this on our own. But the positive thing, because we are a capitalistic society, is that it's going to prove to be cheaper to manufacture plant milks as opposed to dairy milks. And that's, I think that's where we hit the tipping point, when there are processes that come up that can make plant milks less expensive than the animal milks, and when people become more accustomed to them. And I was happy to hear that they're putting these plant milks in Publix. I don't know if you're familiar with that supermarket, but it's pretty much a mainstream supermarket in the Florida area. And I like that they're making these products with minimal ingredients. So that is all good. Now, let's move on. So I always say this, if you have any comments and questions, you can send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And I'm always open to hearing from you live. You can call in with comments and questions right now. The number is 1-888-874-4888. Again, 1-888-874-4888. Love to hear from you right now. I'm going to be chatting about a number of different things for the rest of the program, so I welcome anyone who might want to join in the conversation. It could be fun. So let's continue talking about dairy milk. Now, it's great that they've got this new process, this cold press process over at Elmhurst Milk. But you know, you can make your own milks too. It's not complicated. It helps to have a high-powered blender, but you can even make milk with a regular blender. What I've been doing, probably, I soak. I usually use almonds, but you can use any nut. Soak them overnight in clean water, and then rinse them. And I usually take about a cup of nuts, soak them, and then rinse them, and then put that cup of nuts in a blender with about a cup of water. Now, if I'm using a high-powered blender, I probably could add all my liquid at once, but I find that adding a small amount of liquid with the nuts helps blend it up a lot easier. And then I pour off the liquid into a fine mesh strainer or several layers of a cheesecloth so that you can separate the papery skin of the nut from the actual liquid. And then I'll repeat this process. I'll add another cup, another cup, another cup, blend it up, filter it, blend it, filter it, and you have milk. It's that simple. You can add vanilla to it if you like. You could add salt and sugar if you like that too. I tend to avoid salt and sugar in my foods, but it's that easy. And sometimes I like to mix it up with mixed nuts, add a couple of Brazil nuts in maybe. Cashew milk is even easier than almonds because it doesn't have the papery skin on the outside. So you can just soak them and blend them. And we make plenty of cashew milk and cashew cream. Cashew cream is just less water. It's just thicker. but it's wonderful for any kind of sauce you can imagine. And if you visited responsibilityandliving.com, you've seen many of our cashew cream-based recipes. Hemp milk is probably, seems to be the easiest. I don't know why, because I don't think you need to soak the hemp seeds. They just blend up really smooth and creamy. The problem is, here in the United States, because we're not allowed to grow hemp, just another one of those crazy things, it's expensive. It's more expensive. Hemp seeds can be pretty pricey. I think I remember, too, that they can't even, they're not even allowed to consume hemp in Australia, hemp seeds. Is that true? I think so. Oh, what a planet. Anyway, so you can just make all of these wonderful products on your own, and they're really not too difficult. For example, I'm going to be making some yogurt later today, and I think I'm going to modify the yogurt recipe that I have at Responsibility and Living because I'm starting to make it a little differently. I'm a little crazy about food and what I like to do, but when I use almonds, for example, I soak the almonds, I rinse them, and then I manually remove the skins. I find it a very relaxing, zen-like process, but most people don't have the patience for that, and I understand that. But if the almonds are good quality and they're fresh, the skins will just slide right off. But you could buy blanched almonds, or you could blanch the almonds yourself, and the skins should come off a lot more easily. But that's probably why some people choose to use cashews when they make their own yogurt, because they don't have to worry about the skins. But once I've got the almonds, the white almond without the skin on the exterior, when I've got them all ready and soaked, then I blend them to a creamy thick consistency, not too dilute, and then cook that mixture to about 170 degrees. And I like to use a candy thermometer so that I know what temperature it's going to. Then I let it cool to about 110 degrees. And at this point, I add in a couple of tablespoons of yogurt that I've already made or purchased that doesn't have anything in it, just yogurt unsweetened. Or you could use probiotics. If you buy some probiotics in a vitamin store, you can remove the capsule, take out the powder, and add maybe 6 capsules worth. And that's enough to get your yogurt going. And you can fill it in small containers or in one container. You can just let it sit in a warm place and let it go for 24 hours. I fortunately have a dehydrator option on my oven. So I just put it in there at like 110, 115 degrees, and 8 hours later, I've got fantastic yogurt. And that's all you have to do. So again, I understand why people would use cashews, because you don't have to remove the skins, but sometimes I like almonds. I just like almonds. Ah, dairy. I can't wait for the time when little kids have yogurt and milk and cheese, and when we tell them that they used to come from animals, they'll like roll their eyes and say, "What? Oh, that's disgusting." But we've got a ways to go for that, right? So the next question I have for you folks is, how many people are participating in the Food Revolution Network annual summit? Right now. It's going on right now. Well, not right now. Well, the replays are going on right now. But it's a 9-day summit. And every day, it started on Saturday, ends next Sunday. And there are 3 hours of interviews. John Robbins is doing the interviews. Ocean Robbins is monitoring the whole thing, the host of the event. And I've been behind the scenes answering a lot of the comments and questions that come in on their broadcast page. And I also offer up a daily recipe. And I find it just so rejuvenating and inspiring and also frustrating to sit for 3 hours and listen to these different interviews. It's just so intense on so many levels. And what continues to surprise me, and it's healthy for me. I've been doing this for like 45 years, actually. It being interested in food and plant foods and not eating, consuming meat and the dangers of consuming animal foods. And when I read a comment or hear someone who's new to all of this information, it just surprises me because in my world, it's all around me. And it's hard to imagine that it isn't all around everyone, but it isn't. And all of the information that we have been putting out for decades, we continue to put out, and slowly, slowly, people are getting it. I want to think that more people are getting it quickly now. It's hard to say. And the interesting thing about the wide range of guests that they are interviewing, these different food experts, is they don't all agree. And this makes everyone a little bit confused. So there are some experts who are talking about oils and how oils can be healthy, specific ones. And then, of course, there are others who talk about how oils are processed foods and really should be consumed in small amounts, if any at all. And, you know, a lot of people who aren't focused on food are confused about that. And I don't blame them. We all have to make our own choices about what feels good to us, but here's my spin on all of it. So I agree that oil is a processed food. I recognize that oil has been used in many different cultures, many different food preparations. But it's true that a couple of things. We need to be really careful if we're cooking with oil, because oils can degrade and not be healthy when we're cooking them and they're breaking down. So frying is really not a healthy thing to do. And I tend to saute in water or tea or vegetable broth rather than using oil. So there have been some studies that have come out talking about how tomatoes are really health promoting, and that cooked tomatoes, tomato sauce, for example, is really healthy. And they'll talk about how it's especially good combined with olive oil because there are fat soluble nutrients in the tomatoes and the oil helps the body absorb them. So then the natural question is, well, I thought I wasn't supposed to be eating oil, and now it recommends eating the oil with the tomato sauce. I think the ideal thing is to make oil-free tomato sauce and then consume some sort of healthy fat like a nut-based cheese, for example, or a cashew cheese sauce where you're getting your fat at the same time as you're eating the tomato sauce. That's like perfect because you're using whole foods, you're getting the fat, you're getting the benefits of the cooked tomato. But, you know, if you want to use a small amount of olive oil in your sauce, that's okay. I'm just going to say it's okay. I don't know. We don't have the – no one knows exactly what the ideal diet is. No one knows exactly if there's like a limit of how much of one food or another is going to be good and then detrimental. And then – each one of us as an individual is different. Some people respond to foods positively where others respond to those same foods negatively. There are so many different variables. Yeah, so I can see how you could be confused. Now for me, the bottom line has always been no animals. I got started with a mission to not kill animals. Now, fortunately, I learned later on that plant foods are really healthy. So it's a win-win. And I also learned that growing plants in and eating them rather than growing plants to feed animals to feed people is a lot more environmentally friendly. So it's a win-win-win overall. But my mission is about not killing animals. And there are many health professionals, and their mission is to find the healthiest balance for people. So you may hear different information from people because we're all coming from a different point of view. Yeah. So you're listening to It's All About Food, and I'm Karen Hartglass, and I'm really glad that you're here and that you care about healthy, delicious food. We were listening a couple of days ago in this summit to Dr. Furman, and you know he's my favorite doctor. I love him, and I hope to have him on again soon because he's got a new cookbook out, Eat to Live Quick and Easy, and everybody wants to make their food quick and easy, right? What I loved about his interview was at the end. He just got so excited, just like I get excited, about healthy, delicious food that, you know, it's I can't understand why people don't want to eat this way, because it's fantastic. And, you know, he was echoing that same feeling. The thing is, you don't know how good you can feel, and you don't know how fantastic this food can be if you give it a chance. So here was another thing. We've talked about this a few times on the program, and it's relatively new research. I don't know how many years ago they figured this one out. But it's the importance of chewing, masticating. We need to chew our food. We've known this for a long time because important digestion occurs in the mouth. I like to tell people when they're having smoothies, for example, don't guzzle them. Hold them in your mouth a little bit as if you're chewing it so that you can get some good digestion going. But one of the points brought up in the summit this week was about cruciferous vegetables. And cruciferous vegetables are known for their isothionates. Okay, this is another tricky word. Isothiocyanates. And these are supposed to have wonderful anti-cancer effects. Isothiocyanates. But these vegetables don't have the isothiocyanates that we need right away. They have glucosinolates. And when the cell walls are broken by chewing, for example, then there's a chemical reaction that occurs, and those glucosinolates become isothiocyanates, the good things we need that have the anti-cancer effects. I remember talking about this with Dr. Greger when he came out with his book, How Not to Die. Do you remember? And I wanted to know more about this because he was talking about how he liked to chop his broccoli and then leave it for 45 minutes. So that the glucosinolates could transfer to isothiocyanates before cooking. And I was never able to find exactly the time needed. He was saying 45 minutes, but I wondered, was there a study that figured out how long it takes to do that chemical conversion? And if you know, let me know, because I would like to know. I couldn't find it. But I'm trying to think, it can't happen, it can't take too long to happen, because if it happens from chewing, that's pretty quickly. We don't take 45 minutes to chew a piece of food, right? So the question is, does the conversion happen from blending and chopping? And the answer is yes. My only question is, do we need to wait? And that I'm going to need to dig a little further. Yeah, so it's kind of fascinating that the process that we have of chewing really matters. We need to break the cell walls of these plants that we're eating in order to get the best benefit that we can out of it. So chew. Don't forget to chew. Good. Yeah. Another thing I learned, well, I didn't learn. Another thing that was confirmed, yeah, Kelly Turner. Have you heard about her? She wrote the book Radical Remissions, and she studied people who had cancers, debilitating cancers, that healed themselves. And I remember 11 years ago when I was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer, I wanted to learn about the people who healed, the people who survived. And it blew me away that there was really no information about it. There was one book called Remarkable Recovery. John Robbins gave me that book, and it talked about a handful of people who had survived when their doctors told them they were going to die. And they were inspirational stories, but there was no real thread that I could really get from it to apply to my own life. And that's what Kelly Turner did. She studied all of these people, and she looked for a thread. She looked for the similar things that all of these people did or had that she realized was significant in helping them get well. And she has a list of 9 things, and I smiled when I heard this list. I'll read you the list in a moment. But I smiled because I discovered all of these things for myself when I was going through my own healing journey and made sure that I was really committed to each of these things. Cancer is not caused by one thing. I mean, at some point, I suppose we'll learn the cause and the cure. But I believe it's caused by a number of different things that go on. And the cure or the healing has to have a multifaceted approach. It's not just a pill. It's not just a surgery. It's not just one thing. And her list consists of the following. 1, radically changing your diet. I'm saying to myself, that's a big duh. Yes, of course, radically changing your diet. And that includes lots of plants and eliminating the foods that are going to be toxic. And that can be different for different people. But I think in general, we all agree, refined foods, sugar, lots of processed oils are not healthy. For me, I was already a vegan. And I thought I was super healthy. And I was. I just had a big, giant, massive cancer in my abdominal region. And what I decided to do was radically change my diet. And what that meant was no sugar, no white flour. I liked to consume breads from time to time, and they weren't always the wholest, densest kind. And I started to consume lots more greens, lots more mushrooms, and that was significant. And I still have a daily green juice. So that's key. The second thing is taking control of your health. And in some ways, radically changing your diet is a piece of taking control of your health. But it's an attitude. And I always feel very sad when I see people that submit themselves to the medical profession, the doctors and nurses that are telling an individual what to do in a certain health condition. Sure, it's great to get advice and diagnoses from nurses and doctors and healthcare providers. But we as individuals are in charge, and we really need to be in control. I like to think, you know, we've got some 50 trillion, 100 trillion, 30 trillion. I'm sure it varies, some kind of many trillion amount of cells in our bodies. And we are the god of all of these cells in our body. We are the emperor, the ruler, the one who calls the shots. We have to be in control of our own universe. And I remember the thing that was really bothering me back in the early days of my healing. I needed to have a plan. I wanted to be settled knowing that I had a plan to follow that I believed in, that I felt was really going to support everything that I believed in. And I wasn't really feeling comfortable until I found the plan and went forward with it. And my plan included healthy foods, but it also did include chemotherapy. So I'm not saying that you should avoid some of the conventional methods, but I wanted to make sure that I was going to a place that supported who I was and what I believed in. And I fortunately found a place that felt good to me. And that leads me to the third piece of what she recommends, Kelly Turner, author of Radical Remission. Following your intuition. I love to tell people, if you don't like your doctor, find one you like. You need to follow your intuition. You need to feel positive, especially if you're in a health crisis where you may die. You need to feel really happy and positive with everyone in your circle who is helping you in your healing path. Number four is using herbs and supplements. And during my healing treatment, I spend about $1,000 a month on herbs and supplements. Do they make a difference? I don't know. I want to think that they did. I know the power of the placebo is strong, but I believe that they did affect me in a positive way, because my journey during that time was not as difficult as many others who experienced similar types of treatment. Unfortunately, insurance doesn't cover those things. That's something that needs to change. And it would be nice if we knew which supplements really had a stronger impact than others. I think there's more support now for things like turmeric. I took a lot of curcumin, which is the active part of the turmeric that does the dirty work or the good work. Concentrated broccoli sprouts. I wanted to get supplements that were mostly food-based, nutraceuticals, rather than synthetic versions. I felt better about that. Concentrated mushrooms. Oh, yeah. So using herbs and supplements, I think that's really helpful. Number five, releasing suppressed emotions. This can be really tricky, but there's plenty of evidence today that stress can promote disease, that difficult living situations, when you're having relationships that make you angry. And if you're in a compromised health situation and you're not in a good relationship, it can be, I can't even imagine how you manage that, because you're going to have a lot of negative emotions. And how do you change the relationships you have while you're going through a healing process? That can be so, so challenging. And what I did, I felt like I was, you know, a happy person, and I didn't have any emotional problems. But I thought, I've got to address this, because maybe I do have suppressed emotions. Suppressed means they're hiding. That means you're pushing them away. You're not acknowledging them. And I was fortunate that I had a friend that I had met who lives in Canada, and he does a number of different things. He does Reiki. He does some neuro-linguistic therapy. And he does some other exercises. I don't even know what the names are for what he does. But he agreed to work with me for a weekend. And some of the things he did, I went along with and I was good with. Other things, I just didn't react. I wasn't comfortable with them. So you've got to try a lot of different things. But stuff came up, things that I knew about, but I didn't know they really bothered me. And that was fascinating. Was that a part of causing my personal cancer? I don't know. Who knows? But it could be. And I felt so much lighter and so much better leaving him and after working with him for a weekend. So I think that's important. Then four more things. Increasing positive emotions. I remember reading and hearing that people who had a health crisis, cancer, were told that they had a short time to live or a low risk of survival. I remember reading that the people who knew that they could get through it, the ones who had a positive attitude, they were more likely to make it. And then I thought, okay, I want to be one of those people. But how do you make your emotions positive? How do you do that? How do you do that? For me, I found meditation and positive affirmations did it, and it did it powerfully. It did it powerfully. So you've got these voices in your head. And when you learn that you have a disease, those voices can get loud and they can get scary. You know, what if? What are you going to do? This is going to happen. You're dying and all that stuff. And it's not healthy to keep listening to those voices over and over. Well, I rescripted those voices by saying positive affirmations, the same two or three lines I scripted, and I would say them over and over and over and over, hundreds of times while in a meditation period, so that when the fearful voice would come in, my mind automatically shut it down and started to come back with the positive affirmations that I had scripted. And it works. It really works. So that when I was being rolled into my third surgery after doing a lot of this meditative work, I wasn't afraid. Was not afraid at all. It was so powerful. Okay, number seven, embracing social support. Now, for some of us type A personalities, accepting help can be difficult. I'm always, I'm someone who likes to do everything myself. And at some point, you have to embrace social support. Get some help. Have people around you. This can be challenging for some, but I think it's nice. And express your gratitude when people help. Two more things. Deepening your spiritual connection. Now this can mean many things to many people, but the meditation helped me with this piece of it. And I think it's can be very important for people. And the last thing is have strong reasons for living. Now I do coaching. And when I'm talking with people who are in a health crisis, like cancer, the first question I ask them is, do you want to live? And it's amazing, the response. And ask yourself, do you want to live? When people respond immediately and enthusiastically, I know they're going to make it. And having strong reasons for living is important. Now, this can be challenging in today's day and age because there are so many, well, in any day and age, life on this planet can be challenging, can be ugly, it can be violent, it can be evil. It can be very easy to want to just give it all up. But there's also beauty and wonder and lots of reasons to enjoy your life. It depends on the individual. Sometimes I just like breathing. I just enjoy breathing. And that's my reason for the moment, just to get in another delicious breath, especially right now. It's spring. The air is fresh. It was my birthday a few weeks ago. I got a lot of gifts of flowers, and I love just breathing in that fragrance. It was lovely. It was delicious. So those are the 9 reasons that Kelly Turner offers with her book Radical Remission, and I found that I resonated with all of them, and I found that I really did all of those things to help in my own healing. So I just agree with everything that she put together. I have not read her book yet, and perhaps one day I will. Okay, this last week, my partner Gary and I, we went to the theater, and we saw an interesting production of Eugene O'Neill's Morning Becomes Electra. I don't know if you're aware of it, but Eugene O'Neill, classic American playwright, he had put these 3 plays together. They're often done separately, but they're a trilogy. They go together. And so this was a unique event where they were doing all 3 at once. It was a 5-hour plus extravaganza. And the reason why I'm bringing it up on this program, It's All About Food, is because a piece of it had to do with food. One of the principal actors, Eunice Wong, insisted that the food that was being offered during this production was vegan. So when we came into the play, we were all given some chili lime peanuts to munch on. There were, I think, 3 intermissions. And during the 2nd intermission, we were all treated to what was called a poo-poo platter. It wasn't the poo-poo platter as I know poo-poo platters to be, which is different kinds of meats served on a platter, and you can kind of pick it, the different ones. Now, this was a lovely tofu dish with coconut rice, and we each got a little to-go container, and it was a beautiful night. We could eat outside. They have a nice space outdoors. And we enjoyed this wonderful vegan dish. And I have to applaud Eunice Wong for that. And I think we can all do more about spreading the message of the plant-based diet and not be shy about it. And sometimes insist, or at least strongly recommend, that the food being served at a certain event should be vegan, or at least there should be some vegan options. Now, who is Eunice Wong? She's the author of a book called What the Health. Are you familiar with that book? It just came out in February, and she'll be on the program after the run of Morning Becomes Electra is over. She'll be on in June on this program. I'm looking forward to speaking with her. And the folks who did the Cowspiracy documentary, Kip and Keegan, they put together a documentary based on this book, What the Health. I have not seen that yet. I haven't read the book yet. I will. But looking forward to all of that. What the health? It's kind of fun. Yeah. Well, so we're coming to an end of the program. And again, I invite you to join me at responsibleeatingandliving.com for some of our fantastic recipes. You know, we were talking about milk earlier today and cheese. And I hope you get a chance to read my blog from time to time, my blog, What Vegans Eat. But I'm looking in particular at a recent one, What Vegans Eat, Day 807, where Gary made these fantastic grilled cheese sandwiches. He used my almond mozzarella cheese recipe. We had made a lot of it for my party a few weeks ago, and we freeze some of it. But he used some of that along with roasted red pepper. Just a slab of roasted red pepper and the cheese on some nice bread grilled. Fantastic sandwich. Check it out at What Vegans Eat, Day 807. There's no deprivation on this diet, this lifestyle. You can have it all. And if you don't agree with me or you don't believe me, then write me at info@realmeals.org. We'll have a conversation. I'll turn you on to some lovely, delicious food. It'll be a beautiful thing. I love my food. And I want you to, too. I want you to, too. is another, I want you to, too. That's T-O and T-O-O. Phew. Okay, everybody, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. I am Karen Hartglass, and please, have a delicious week. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.